Here we are. We're in the top 10.
Oh, yep. We're almost there. I could feel it. I could feel the second wind coming on right now.
There we go. The first ever Bond movie is number 10, Dr. No.
Okay, so I'm going to go and be controversial here and say that Dr. No should be lower.
Yeah, I'd say very low budget. The car chase, oh my God, is so bad. Where he's like so obviously spliced in and he's driving around in that Sunbeam, which is a pretty cool car considering they had a low budget at the time. Like, Sunbeam's a cool car, but like it's like they clearly like strapped a camera to like the ground and drove it around, and then they have it spliced in on his windshield, and it's like, what is he driving? Like, did he dig a trench to drive in?
Yeah, no, the problem that I have with it is that of all the Bond movies, it's the most weirdly paced one.
That's true. Where, and it has all those
where
bad...
It varies between trying to be fast and then being way too slow.
Yeah.
At very random times.
Yeah, and it and Thunderball definitely suffer from the, hey, we can just shoot shit during the day and then put a filter on it and everyone will think it's at night even though there's, like, clouds in a blue sky.
They I have to stand up. For at least that method, because I am a fan of Godzilla movies and they use that very frequently.
In what movie?
In all of them. Yeah. They all put a dark filter onto a blue sky full of clouds and say like, oh yeah, that's just as good as night.
Man, I was watching Robert Shaw in The Deep, which is an awesome movie. Really fun, very light, not light in terms of not serious.
Wait, are we gonna have this argument again? Like, okay, so what's The Deep and what's The Abyss? Because I clearly can't tell the difference.
The Deep is Robert Shaw and Nick Nolte diving for treasure, and it's just a really fun, very, you know, like not much substance, not much plot, but just a really fun adventure movie. And then The Abyss is a super long, super boring James Cameron movie.
Hey,
about going
underwater.
You
know what? Don't make fun of James Cameron, because he's out there to save us.
That's true. Any thoughts on Dr. No, Vidor?
I give it a yes.
I like
yes.
It.
Okay, that's good. That's cool. Let's talk about at least the differences between novel and movie in this case.
Oh, the giant squid.
Because no dies in extremely different ways in the novel versus the book.
I don't remember.
Not novel versus the movie.
I don't remember. I haven't seen the movie in so long. I don't remember how he dies, but I remember it's awesome how he dies in the movie, because it's kind of, you know, I mean, in the book, because it's kind of like an anti-climax in terms of like Bond goes through all this torture and then he just dumps a pile of shit on Dr. No from like half a mile away, and No doesn't even know it's Bond who's killed him.
Yeah, no, the one in the movie is the more, I guess, dramatic and personal one where they're trying to climb up a ladder as a nuclear isotope rod is being lowered into the cooling pool that's going to make it, that's supposed to make it bubble, or I mean boil, and that because No's hands are kind of shitty mechanical ones, he can't get a good grip on the ladder. So Bond climbs it up, and then No's just like, oh no, the fact that I don't have any hands is the reason that's killing me, no!
Oh, that's funny.
I wish that Danny DeVito dies in the same manner in the future, finding another superhero, which didn't happen, but it would be hilarious if it did.
If the Penguin died because he couldn't climb a ladder.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I show you my French flip a trick?
One of
the greatest lines from Batman Returns. going on the record with that one. No. I got another one. Ah, crap, I picked the cute one. I'll murder you momentarily. But first, I need a cold drink of ice water. It's like, I think Danny DeVito had spent so much time with Christopher Walken through the production process that he had just absorbed Christopher Walken's personality into him.
But why is Bruce Wayne dressed up like Batman?
Because he is Batman, you moron.
Yes. Okay, so number 9, I would have put it lower, Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die needs to go lower. Just look. Jane Seymour, we can all agree, is a beautiful, beautiful woman in so many ways. But really, she's the only thing that movie has going
for. Yeah, everybody talks about the boat chase. This article talks about the boat chase. The boat chase is 2 million hours long. The boat chase is fun for about the first 5 minutes, and it's fun for that scene everyone shows the clip of where they somehow jump it over those cars. But it's the boat chase is too long and too boring. Like, the boat chase, there needs to be less.
Can I also mention one of the great flaws of the boat chase? Is that instead of it being as good an action scene as it can, they randomly add comic relief to keep the boat chase going.
Yeah.
Because they have that police character from, I think he was from Smokey and the Bandit.
I know. That's the sad thing, is it's not even Jackie Gleason from Smokey and the Bandit. It's just them.
It is deputy from it. Like,
oh, is it? Oh, God damn it.
What?
Yeah, that character's obnoxious. He's funny.
But it's that guy, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, we're making an absurd cameo appearance to another movie that shouldn't be in the canon universe or whatever the hell you want to go with it.
Yeah.
But the idea is this is supposed to be our hallmark action sequence. Let's go with it. But because we're actually unconfident about it, we're going to put in comic relief. And not even just that, but they also put it again in Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah, and I gotta say, he bothers me less in Man with the Golden Gun because he's in it for less, but he's just in way too much of Live and Let Die. He's in a good, 30 minutes of that damn movie. Also, the villain gets inflated like a balloon and explodes. That's so stupid. Yeah. And then the line is, where is whatever the villain's name is, and he doesn't even answer it. He goes, he always had an inflated opinion of himself. That movie is not a good start for Roger Moore. The only good part about it was the cover of the DVD from the early 2000s had a great shot of Roger Moore in a wetsuit with Baron Zemeti behind him. Like, that, that's the best I can say about that movie.
Yeah, no, the problem is they had a really creepy villain, but they decided to make him a inconsequential minion.
Yeah, and you don't even know, Baron Zemeti doesn't do anything in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than you realize, he was just this, the smokescreen that Dr. Kananga used to trick the locals to, not rat out his coke business.
Yeah, and also,
And the idea of, that would have been a great idea. Let's do a big reveal that Kananga was a pawn and that there was actually this Haitian, voodoo trying to be warlord guy who might have supernatural powers, might not have supernatural powers. We don't find that out until James Bond actually has the big fight at the end with him.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been a much more satisfying climax, I thought.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, and I also don't like that there's no place for supernatural powers in the James Bond universe. And the fact that Jane Seymour plays the psychic and she, predicts James Bond coming. She's like, he will arrive on a plane. He will, it's like, no, why is this woman able to break the future? This is a James Bond movie.
And as soon as he does her, she's like, okay, power's gone.
any thoughts on Live and Let Die, Vidor?
I've also not seen that one.
That's okay.
It's on the list.
Yeah. Another.
Was that during the Eagles period, by the way?
The what?
The Eagles period of McCartney.
Oh, the Wings.
Wings.
Yes.
Eagles. Wings. Oh, my God. minus at least 25 points for that one.
Yeah, that's the thing is, and Paul McCartney wrote that theme song in a day, and it shows. Paul McCartney can write good melodies in his sleep, but as Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time shows, he has a lot of trouble thinking of decent lyrics. Name a single lyric from Live and Let Die that's not the words Live and Let Die. That song has
no. That doesn't count?
Exactly. That song has no fucking lyrics. So yeah, not a fan. It's, you know, it's a James Bond movie, so I like it. I'll watch it if it's on, but never one I would put on my own. Also, one of the few James Bond movies without Q in it, because they decided they wanted to have it emphasize the gadgets less, despite the fact that the movie's ridiculous. So that watch that he has that has like a bunch of crazy crap in it is simply handed to him by Moneypenny.
Oh yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. So, number 8, From Russia With Love, should definitely be higher.
Okay. From Russia With Love, I have to say, and I've argued with people, not even you, Thor, the person that I argue the most about James Bond things with. I've argued this, and I don't think that it's poorly paced. The complaint that I got is that it is really badly paced.
No, it's awesome. Every single part of it's interesting. The problem
that most people point to, at least when I argue with them, is when Bond goes among the Turks.
Oh, the like gypsy camp scene and everything?
And that seems to go nowhere until someone tries to kill Bond, but, you know, we always kind of knew that Bond was staking out the Russian embassy, so why didn't someone, you know, try to shoot him from the Russian embassy, and he didn't have to go out to, you know, do Turks, gypsies, hey, let's do local color news for a while.
Oh, that scene has good music, though. I like that scene.
No, I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. I'm just telling you the argument that I...
Yeah, no, I don't see that. I think that movie's very well paced. Yeah, I wouldn't change a single thing about that movie. The movie, it's very close to the book. The book's very good. I like everything about that. I think it's cool how, like, you know, I still, despite how many times I've seen that movie, I just saw the end of it again recently, and when Blofeld is, you know, brings in the two people, and he's talking about how disappointed he is, and then you think he's going to kill the girl, but he kills the guy, that still surprises me.
Beautiful. And the book is even better because of the part one where they spend so much time explaining what's going on the antagonist side.
Yeah, yeah, the history of Red Grant and the fact that
Red Grant, and then you've got sort of a lot more action between Smersh and Colonel Klebb, and you know that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, and then the whole part where the little preface to the book where Ian Fleming says that all of the Russian KGB higher-ups that are pictured around the desk in that scene are, as best as British intelligence has figured out, the people who would actually be in those roles. And which I thought was a nice touch of realism, you know, that he explains how, you know, sort of who is running the KGB right now. And another thing it taught me was that it is impolite in Russia if someone offers, at least back then, if someone offers you a drink, you're supposed to drink the entire thing at once.
Oh, yeah, no, that's been a killer for me for years. hey, now, okay, so here's the question. Riddle me this. What's the one James Bond movie or novel where James Bond dies?
Dies. Wow. I have no idea.
It is From Russia With Love.
Really? Oh!
In the novel From Russia With Love, the last moment is Klebb actually stabbing him with the poison toad shoe and James Bond succumbing to the poison. And
that's right.
This is equivalent to saying, you know, just like Ian Malcolm died in Jurassic Park, and then and Sherlock Holmes died in The Final Problem, and then, you know, years, months, whatever later, people were like, you know, we're gonna hold it against you if you don't write a little bit more.
So you're gonna have to come up with
some crazy excuse to undo what you just did. And From Russia With Love was supposed to be the swan song of Bond. Fleming actually killed him off at the end.
Wow, because I forgot about that. I remember, I've read From Russia With Love, but years and years ago, and I was just reading Dr. No, and at the beginning, Bond is in seriously bad shape. At the beginning of Dr. No, and they said that, well, who was it, the medic or whoever arrived on scene was able to administer some kind of anti-venom, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's the equivalent of the end of From Russia with Love is the equivalent of Sherlock Holmes going over Reichenbach, and Ian Malcolm succumbing to the T-Rex wounds in Jurassic Park, only to come back later in Lost World pretty much to do the same thing, which is appear in the first third of the book, get injured, and then be high on morphine for the rest of it.
That's funny. Number 7, GoldenEye.
GoldenEye's good. I mean, GoldenEye's really good.
That's got a great Bond car. It's got a great Bond theme song.
GoldenEye.
And I gotta say, Boris, I loved as a kid. He was always my favorite character. Yes,
oh,
I'm invincible.
God. When I found out he was Nightcrawler, I shat myself.
Yeah. Have you seen GoldenEye, Vidor?
I've not seen GoldenEye.
Okay, yeah, I would say...
I am invincible!
I'd say, Vidor, that should be the first of these
the
you check
Eye
out.
Game, right? Is that the one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no. It's close enough.
Yeah. Yeah, GoldenEye game's great. They just re-released that on the Wii with... Or on everything, but I played it on the Wii with Daniel Craig as Bond in it. It was really cool.
I don't know how I feel about that, though. Because I think it's like... That's Brosnan's best attempt at making a lasting James Bond impression. Just like License to Kill is Dalton's best chance, and we don't know what Craig's best chance is yet, yeah, because he's still got more chances.
It's going to be hard for him to top Skyfall. I really liked that. The have you ever played the James Bond video game Everything or Nothing? That was Brosnan's last appearance as Bond in any format, and it has
I
Jaws.
I actually have.
Yeah, I like that game.
That's a really strong game.
I did
not enjoy it.
What's that? You didn't like it?
Oh, no, I didn't like it because it didn't do too well in it. That's not a joke.
Yeah, but I love that it has... Willem Dafoe as like Christopher Walken. I forget if it's his brother or just like his protege.
No, it was a View to a Kill throwback, which I, you know, of course I appreciate that. Yeah. Come on now.
And then when they say I believe you know and he Zoran and or this is Zoran's protege and he goes, oh yes, I knew, and they have Brosnan go, as only Brosnan can, oh yes, I knew Zoran, I played bridge with him once.
That's a good line. Yeah. That's a really good line.
And so here
for that.
So here is what I think is the second biggest abomination of this list. Number 6, on Her Majesty's Secret Service, Gag Me with a Spoon.
Okay, so I'm gonna play devil's advocate on this one.
Okay.
Do you hate it because you don't like Lazenby?
That's the thing. Telly Savalas, great. That scene at the end, in fact, Lazenby he's able to do that scene at the end where he's like, she's just sleeping after his wife's killed. That scene, he totally has acting chops in. The rest of that movie, Lazenby is not a strong actor, and the movie doesn't play to his strengths. They make him into this weak Bond. When he looks at the camera and says that never would have happened to the other fella, I mean, what the hell? You're just setting yourselves up to, like, you know.
Look, they were just overly cautious to the replacement of Bond. So here's the narrative. Connery's out. They have to replace him. They find Lazenby. They think, oh, this guy looks good. Lazenby actually does a good job, but everyone's like, oh, man, no, but it can only be Sean Connery. Sean Connery comes back, does a shitty movie.
And Connery...
a terrible movie.
Connery, like...
And then everyone's like, okay, maybe it doesn't have to be Sean Connery all the time. And then when they put Roger Moore, it's like, you know what? Roger Moore is better than nothing.
I like Roger Moore. Lazenby just was not Bond. He wasn't suave enough. Like, he didn't move with confidence. There's a scene in Her Majesty's Secret Service where he reads a goddamn Playboy. Bond doesn't need to read a Playboy. Bond is Playboy magazine. Like, it was pathetic. The bass was cool. Savalas was great, but like, come on, guys, jeez.
Okay, so I think the biggest objection to On Her Majesty's Secret Service is that people do not like Lazenby.
Yes.
But the thing is, the script is good, and the direction's still okay. So, it's a Sean Connery quality movie, but just doesn't have to happen to have Sean Connery in it.
Yeah, so I mean, the action.
So everyone's like, oh, it can't possibly be good. But the next movie where it's like, oh, let's put Sean Connery in this movie, which is not Sean Connery quality. Oh, we realize that it's the quality of the movie, the writing and the direction, and not necessarily the actor all the time. It wasn't Sean Connery who made James Bond. It was Sean Connery, the writing, the direction that made James Bond.
Yeah, although I don't know, I feel like Diamonds Are Forever, as much as like we were both being hard on it, it feels more like a Bond movie, and not just because Connery's in it. Like, it's got more like sort of intrigue. It's got more of like suspense and the criminal element. Like, I feel like as much as Savalas is a good villain, I don't remember a single thing he says in that. And I feel like most of the movie consists of like Bond sort of like climbing things and going to and from things. Like, very little of it consists of him being Bond or being a spy, you know?
I mean, I don't know if I'm confident in saying, look, yeah, I wouldn't put it as high, but I wouldn't drop it to the bottom.
Oh yeah, it's not.
And I wouldn't call it a bad movie, and I wouldn't call Lazenby a bad Bond, because you know what? Lazenby found actually the persona that he needed, and I have proof of this. Lazenby found Bond eventually, but you have to be like an uber nerd to figure this out. In the you know, of course, the great critical acclaim that's been heaped upon the Batman animated series franchise that birthed the DC Universe franchise, that, you know, like, that since 1995 there's been a DC comic book hero cartoon on the air for kids consistently.
Yeah, yeah, the original Batman the Animated Series is one of my favorite things.
This was one of the great moments where, you know, Mark Hamill came into his own finally, and he wasn't just Luke Skywalker. He actually played the Joker in such a way that it was incredibly memorable and normative for what the character ought to be.
Yes. And still the best Joker portrayal. I'm including Ledger in that.
Richard Small, Bull from Night Court, a Two-Face. And you've got all these great, you know, unexpectedly good voice actors doing great acting. And there was the follow-up to it, which was Batman Beyond. Batman training a successor during his twilight years. And one of the characters was, or the villains that Batman fought, was a group called the Royal Flush Gang, which was kind of a DC equivalent to the Hellfire Club that you see in Marvel and X-Men.
Okay.
So whereas the Hellfire Club all named themselves after chess pieces, the Royal Flush Gang named themselves after playing cards. And in Batman Beyond TV show, the king of the Royal Flush Gang was played by George Lazenby.
Interesting.
And you had this suave, cunning, completely in control of the situation, calculating womanizer character, actually, who could beat Batman at every, or who could outthink Batman in every step of the way, but if it wasn't for the fact that his daughter, who you know, in terms of the Royal Flush, King, Queen, Jack, Ace, Ten was his daughter character, and they had sort of, Batman and her had sort of a Catwoman-Batman relationship.
Oh, okay.
Like, oh yeah, I know you're a bad guy, but we kind of get along on the outside of this whole criminal versus hero business thing. But yeah, no, watch Lazenby in that, and you'll see, yes, he is Bond. if he could have not been hung up by script or direction, he had Bond in him. And if you want to see Bond in him, look at King in Batman Beyond. That's Bond. That's freaking Bond. It's cold. It's what's the mission? It's I love people as much as I can. I use people as much as I need. And yeah,
that's cool. I will have to check that out. Vidor, have you seen Her Majesty's Secret Service or Batman Beyond?
I remember watching Batman Beyond growing up, but I don't really remember too much of it. I always remember it was kind of like, it just seemed darker than the regular, like, other Batman cartoons that I've seen.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was fine. You know, I just don't really remember too much of it.
Yeah, yeah, no. Hey, number five, guys, Spy Who Loved Me. I think that's right where that should be. Definitely.
I don't think that's where it should be. I think I would be a little bit lower on that.
Really? Yeah, I think it's the best of Roger Moore's. I think I like Roger Moore a lot more than you do. All the stuff in Egypt is beautiful. Jaws is
Atlantis
great.
They have Atlantis in that movie?
Okay, so you would say this would be the best Roger Moore.
Yes, easily. This is definitely my favorite Roger Moore.
Okay. I think it's just a matter of we all, you know, you and I have the same, you know, place for where we would put the best Roger Moore. But the thing is, we disagree on what the best Roger Moore is. I would go Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely my second favorite. But
I think that's all we really disagree about. It's look, there's a really good Roger Moore out there. It's just you like one a little bit more than I did.
Yeah, and I think Vider brought up a good point. The whole Atlantis thing, that beautiful undersea complex. I'm a big fan of things that take place under the water and are still interesting. I think that's one of the reasons James Cameron's The Abyss disappointed me so much, is because it took place under the water and was boring as shit. So I definitely give a lot of points to this for the underwater stuff. I love that scene. They had to build that soundstage just to have where the two nuclear submarines are in it, and they're like blowing the crap out of it. They had to build a soundstage big enough just to make that that water set. And I think that's a really neat sequence.
And what I just connected the dots now, that's kind of like the similar thing to Moonraker, though, that this villain wants to like make the world pure again and like create a new race of people, you know, like that's the whole goal and The Spy Who Loved Me is like this guy's trying to make everyone live in the ocean.
That's a very good point. It is, you're right, it is Moonraker, but underwater, and I, as much as I like space, I've always been an even bigger fan of, like, the idea of, like, underwater cities and stuff, so I think that's why I like it better than Moonraker.
I hate to play my cards entirely, but did you know there was also a Batman the Animated Series based on Spy Who Loved Me?
No way!
Yeah, no, so they end up, okay, so the idea is, you've got Mr. Freeze, who Batman the Animated Series made cool again. That was ironic, wasn't it? No, but literally, like, Mr. Freeze was given a great backstory by Paul Dini and was turned into a really great episode. And the follow-up to it was Mr. Freeze was broken out of prison by a robot using the same Freeze technology that he pioneered, and Freeze is like, okay, so I don't want to break out of prison because I'm just, you know, my motivations are not to, you know, ruin the world, it's just that I wanted revenge for my wife. And he finds out that there's this dude who is pretty much the equivalent of Stromberg from Spy Who Loves Me. It's this weird cross between Stromberg and Walt Disney. So it's Stromberg in the sense that he creates this Atlantis utopia out in the middle of the water and wants to destroy everything around it so that Atlantis utopia can now repopulate the world. But the reason why he has the money to finance this is because he is Walt Disney. He has the money from this entertainment empire, this amusement park empire, and that he hires Freeze because he wants to live long enough to see his Atlantis utopia take over the world, and he's dying. So he wants, like, okay, Freeze, you know, you've got this whole immortality thing. You've frozen your body to cryogenic suspension, but you can still move around. Do that to me, and guess what? I have your wife, and she's still alive. Let's make a deal. So yeah, and it ends up being the last appearance of Mr. Freeze on the animated series before they did a TV movie about Mr. Freeze.
Oh,
but
Sub-Zero,
which was during the transition between Fox into WB and them pitching the Superman cartoon and also pitching Batman Beyond the cartoon and all these things. But yeah, so Spy Who Loved Me also ended up getting parodied by Batman.
That's really cool. Number four, I would put this as number one, Goldfinger.
Oh, Goldfinger. That's my... Just from the music alone. Come on now.
That's true, yeah. And, of course, that line, "No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die."
"Oh, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die."
Yeah.
It's like he was supposed to be Scottish, but he never had a Scottish accent. He had a vaguely German accent.
Well,
it's like
book...
a German who was taught English in Scotland.
Yeah, in the book he's supposed to be Scottish-German, but in the movie they definitely don't mention anything about him being German.
That must be it. I think the actor must have just been clever enough to try to do that.
Yeah, even weirder, though, apparently they dubbed all his lines. That's not the actor. That's that they dubbed all that character's lines. So let's assume he had, like, a regular Scottish accent, and then Albert Broccoli got to the end, and he's like, "Man, we gotta throw some German in here, quickly. Get Peter Sellers doing a Dr. Strangelove voice."
Well, okay, so to play my cards again, yeah, I mean, back when I was doing shows frequently, there was one show where I was asked to do an Irish accent, but as if I had been taught English by Norwegians. So it's like, yeah, do a half Norwegian, half Irish accent. And I just looked at the director and said, "What the hell does that even mean?" I have no idea what that even begins to mean.
I also love that, still one of the coolest Bond cars, the DB5 with the ejection seat and the...
That's the definitive Bond car, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and the machine guns that come out of the lights and everything. Oh, that thing's so cool.
That one and the bulletproof thing in the back, and they had the ejector seat. And,
yeah.
And the rotating license plates for different countries.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It had the smoke and oil slicks that he uses, like when they're driving through the forest away from gold.
That's right, and I gotta say, that's gotta be the first car with an oil slick that comes out of it, like with a with that device, because that's such a like cliche now in spy movies. But like that, I think that was the first one with an oil slick that came out of it.
You know, I think the DB5 why it was the most definitive James Bond car.
Why?
Because it was one. As luxurious as we could get, but also we had the gadgets that weren't pushing beyond the realm of possibility.
That's a good point. As opposed to the...
I actually think that the gadgets that were engineered into it could be engineered into some sort of military spy car.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, invisible car, yeah, I don't think that they could make an invisible car.
I don't think
they can make a car that has, ground-to-air missiles.
Yeah, or the one, that the Lotus that turns into the submarine.
Yes, oh, yeah, that one too. And Scaramanga, his car that becomes a plane. Granted, they actually did create a car plane, but the idea of the car that could easily attach itself to a plane attachment and fly away.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, we got more fantastical with the gadgets, but the DB5 was the last Bond car that was, totally believable as, the most expensive and the most practical in terms of gadgets that could be pulled off in a vehicle of that size.
And I think that's why Goldfinger is, to my mind, easily the best movie, is because it does what I think they brought back with Craig, where... Everything's really cool, but it's not so out there. You know, like everything about the movie Goldfinger seems like it can happen. The villain has realistic motivations. Like it's mostly about him trying to manipulate, the currencies. He's not trying to take over the world. He's just trying to make himself richer. And then even how Bond with the laser when he's trying to kill Bond, he just decides like maybe he'll be useful later. Bond is screwed in that scene, and I think that's really cool that he isn't able to pull off an escape. He's at the mercy of his captors at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
one of my
personal favorites of the movie is Odd Job and the head he has. He takes the neck off people.
That is awesome, yeah. When he knocks that statue off when they're golfing, that's so cool. Actually, the whole golfing scene in that is fantastic.
Okay, so let me
oh,
ask
go,
you this.
Wait, go ahead, Biter. Sorry, what was that?
Clear to me, but maybe it was clear in the novel, because I haven't read it. What was in Oddjob's hat that allowed it to be as high impact and damaging?
I feel like it
was a metal disc, you know, like some kind of...
Like a razor sharp disc,
so
right?
It's like Xena Warrior Princess that just happened to be in a hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a razor sharp disc. And I believe in the novel, he just karates people. I don't know if he has the hat in the novel. I just remember...
I vaguely remember that being the case. He was more of a... that since he was a former wrestler, like he was a Korean wrestler, that he could just kind of like overpower you, even though he was shorter than you, but still like choke you out.
And there was a lot of stuff with leverage, with like kicking up. Like I think Goldfinger does a demonstration for Bond in the novel, where Oddjob like does a like jumping front kick and just like busts this marble fireplace. Like just knocks the top off of it. The movie definitely improves Pussy Galore, because in the novel they make her like a lesbian in the way Ian Fleming thought a lesbian would be, where she was only a lesbian.
She just has the proper male genitalia.
Yeah, pretty much, exactly. Yeah, she was like abused as a kid, so she became a lesbian, and you know Bond just has to straighten her out. And I like that. I think she's a much.
Did you mean that ironically or literally?
That oh god, wow, yeah, I didn't mean to be that dirty. But I welcome it.
I just assume that you do, and I have to give a check on that.
But yeah, I think it's much better in the movie, where she's a much stronger female character instead of being like. Oh, look, she's only a strong female character because there's something wrong with her, you know? Like, I definitely think they improve upon the character for the movie. So, yeah, definitely my favorite movie. Let's see what this magazine thought were better than it.
I haven't heard You Only Live Twice yet, which I'm very surprised.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of You. I mean, it's pretty good, but like...
Don't go so far to say you're not a fan of You.
I'm not a fan.
I don't think it's number one or two, but I
here
mean,
we are. Number,
it's still one of the best ones.
Number three... You only live twice. Number three.
You only live twice.
Yeah, see, I was never as into...
So it
I was never as into You Only Live
Come
Twice.
On now. I'm being sung to by Frank's daughter, so, you know, I really am already sold.
See, that's the thing. Frank Sinatra's daughter, not good at doing her job. Not good at being a singer.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like her. I don't like Boots Are Made for Walking. I don't like her singing You Only Live Twice. James Bond's Stupid Little Helicopter, I didn't like. James Bond training.
Little Nelly? You're against Little Nelly?
James Bond training at the dojo, didn't like, thought it was a waste of time. James Bond getting a wig and slight makeup and being able to pass for Asian, stupid, absurd, didn't like it. Would have been better if they just put no makeup on
him
at
racist.
All.
Absolutely racist, yes, I will give you that.
Yeah.
Hang on, real quick here, I gotta sign off, I got an early day tomorrow.
Oh yeah, no problem, yeah, sorry this has been running so long, lots to talk about with Bond. But final thoughts on Bond there, man?
I think it's a pretty good franchise, and I hope to see it grow in the future.
Exactly. Well, hey, thanks so much. Sorry we kept you so late.
Okay, Spider, I want to leave you with this. Your score tonight, actually, 33.5. So you have beaten Hogan.
Yeah.
All right. Woo.
Hey, thanks so much, Spider. Always great to talk to you. We appreciate you being on this.
Yeah, no problem. This is Spider signing off.
Bye.
Good evening.
Hey, so it's back to the original two here.
And it's just us rambling about shit. Well, hey now. Okay, so let's get to it.
So go ahead, defend You Only Live Twice.
Defend You Only Live Twice?
Yeah.
Donald Pleasence.
That's true. Far and away the
Donald
best Blofeld.
Donald Pleasence, the greatest Blofeld of all time.
Yeah, no, if you could...
The thing was, this was the big reveal movie. This was... Bond versus the bad guy who was the actual big bad guy from every movie before. It's like the thing you only see at the end of a television season. Oh, it actually turned out to be this evil bald guy with a cat.
Yeah, no, Donald Pleasance is amazing. I love Donald Pleasance. He's great in all of the Halloween movies he was in. He's great in The Great Escape. I just saw Prince of Darkness.
He's great in The Fantastic Voyage.
I actually haven't seen that. I got to check that out.
Oh, he's in The Fantastic Voyage.
I just saw Prince of Darkness.
Can I spoil it for you?
Sure, why not?
He's sort of the part of the team, but the one that kind of always fucks up because he is always out for himself.
Oh, so he's Dr. Smith.
And ends up getting eaten by a white blood cell.
So he's Dr. Smith in Lost in Space.
Okay, so the interesting thing is that you've made a Lost in Space connection, and I just want to make sure that you and all of you listeners out there in podcast land know just how much nerd cred your dear friend Balder has. Okay, so we've got Donald Pleasance to Dr. Smith. Dr. Smith, the guy who played Dr. Smith, also played the character Lucifer on the original Battlestar Galactica. And Lucifer's character was a Cylon who was the minion of Count Baltar, who was the human traitor who worked for the Cylons and pursued the colonial fleet. Funny thing that you should mention that the reimagined Baltar in the new Battlestar Galactica series ended up being just that same character, the shitty guy who always betrayed the team when it was in his best interest.
That's funny.
Happened.
Yeah.
It's like as if the people that write this are like us for some reason, Thor. I can't imagine why.
That's too funny. But yeah, no, I like about the first 20 minutes of You Only Live Twice, where they do like the burial at sea, and he has the oxygen tank on, and they do the that cool scene in where he meets like the equivalent of James Bond in Japan, like in that alley. His
Well, that's the original appearance of Charles Gray in the James Bond series. He's the British intelligence officer who gets garroted, and then two movies later he ends up being Blofeld, which is ironic because Blofeld was the one that ordered the Charles Gray character in You Only Live Twice to be assassinated in the first place.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, no, You Only Live Twice I could never get into. I'd say...
Oh, come on, there's a special Agent Tiger.
You know what I gotta say? I'm
gonna do the line.
I don't even remember that line. Go ahead.
No, I'm talking about the shadow line.
Oh, a tiger? Where?
Come on! There is actually an officer tiger, at least special agent tiger, yeah. Whatever.
Gotta say,
have, but there is an officer tiger in it.
Gotta say, my least favorite Connery movie. I'd put.
I'll tell you another two reasons why you should like it. You Only Live Twice. They actually did get proper Japanese actors to act in it, and the Bond girls in that film I recognized as a child because they were actresses from Godzilla movies.
Yeah, I heard that the woman. Yeah, the woman who plays the Japanese agent. One, it's cool she's actually Japanese, since they have trouble even doing that these days, where Memoirs of a Geisha was all Chinese actresses. So that's really cool.
Well, you have the first one that gets killed off, Akiko Wakabayashi, who's played by she plays the role of Kissy Suzuki, the one that works for Officer Tiger, and she is in a few of my favorite movies, including King Kong versus Godzilla.
Is that the one where they find King Kong's heart and make like a robot King Kong out of it?
No. That's a mashup of two movies that I probably told you about. The one where they find a heart and grow a monster out of it is Frankenstein Conquers the World. And then the one where King Kong fights a robot King Kong is called King Kong Escapes.
Oh, okay.
But she's in King Kong vs. Godzilla as the plucky next-door neighbor. She's in Dogora, a monster from space, which is about space jellyfish that come down and eat diamonds.
Not the space jellyfish!
So it's a split plot. on one hand, you've got the scientists versus the space jellyfish that are trying to eat carbon, and on the other side, it's a police thriller about a you know, cop detective sort of party trying to find these diamond smugglers who are constantly confounded in their plot by these jellyfish from outer space who keep eating their loot.
This movie sounds amazing.
Ghidorah is a great movie, actually. And then she's in the movie Ghidorah, the Three-Headed Monster, as a prophetess from the planet Mars, Akiko Wakabayashi. And she's also in the Woody Allen movie, What's Up, Tiger Lily?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the one where it's all him dubbing over an original kung fu movie, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it's Mia Hama, the second one that doesn't die in the James Bond movie, that is in King Kong Escapes, the one versus King Kong versus a robot King Kong. she plays an agent from North Korea that's hired an Asian renegade scientist from undisclosed country to build a robot King Kong to mine for uranium in Antarctica. And the great part about it is the renegade scientist that builds the robot King Kong to mine uranium in Antarctica is named Doctor Who.
That's fantastic.
And here's the part that always confused me. His costume is modeled on the actual first Doctor in the British television show.
That's hilarious.
He has the same hat, the same suit, the same cape.
Dude, that's
too funny. And the same kind of like long gray hair. It's just Asian Doctor Who, but he happens to be evil. with a giant robot King Kong for some reason.
I gotta say, look.
I think Mie Hama, actually, the one that I'm talking about, threatened to kill herself if she didn't get the role as Bond girl. So, oh! I mean, one, that's disturbing. Two, that's like, if it's true, it's way too confirming a particular stereotype that Westerns have of Japanese people.
Yeah, yeah, wait, they said that in this. Let me see if I can find it. It was under the Bond girls section.
Mia Hama?
Yeah, they talked about that. They talked about her doing that in the Bond girls section of this.
Yeah.
Here it is. One second. I forgot it's Honor Blackman who plays Pussy Galore. That's Honor Blackman from the Avengers, right?
Yes. Wait, yeah, she was in the Avengers for a while, wasn't she?
Yeah, the original before Emma Peel, right? Was Honor Blackman?
Yeah, yeah. There were different female protagonists in the Avengers.
Yeah, here it is. When producers wanted to fire her for not learning English faster, she threatened to commit ritual suicide out of shame. She may have been bluffing, but the movie honchos backed off and Mia kept the role.
Yeah, yeah. Bless you, Mia Hama. She's still alive, I think. So let's hope she's listening and let her know that, one, I think you were ridiculously hot, and two, I'm glad you didn't kill yourself.
Okay, so you still haven't won me over on You Only Live Twice. I gotta say, I think I like Diamonds Are Forever better.
The volcano face. The volcano base. Look, every parody of James Bond has needed the volcano base.
Yeah, yeah. And then
what happened without this movie?
And Dr. Evil is clearly completely modeled after the way Blofeld's portrayed in this, down to the scar on his eye and the scar on his cheek. But, you know, I gotta say, I love Blofeld in this, but I don't like anything else that happens in the movie, including half the stuff with Blofeld. Like, it pains me to say it, but this was... you know, and maybe it was just because this was one of the final James Bonds I watched. I don't think I saw this one until college for whatever reason. It wasn't, I just didn't happen to catch it on the James Bond marathons, but I really am not a fan. Sorry to hear that, or you're sorry to hear that. I'm happy with my opinion. Let's go to number two. So there's only a few movies left here. Number two is Casino Royale, Daniel Craig's debut. Fantastic. I
would say, number two would be David Niven's Casino Royale and Peter Sellers.
That movie, oh, what could have been, when that movie was supposed to star Peter Sellers the entire time until Peter Sellers kept fighting with them about things, so they wrote in all that other stuff about Woody Allen and David Niven. All of those people were brought in once they couldn't keep control of Peter Sellers.
That movie had multiple directors, because each one, like the David Niven stuff, the Peter Sellers stuff, the Woody Allen stuff, was all directed by a different director.
Yeah, and that movie is very funny overall. I like pretty much every single scene in that movie, but man,
it does look like it's been taped together from remnants of something.
And just, oh, because what happened was Peter Sellers wanted it to be funny, but he wanted to still play, like, you know, a suave, you know, sort of spy type character who would just be, you know, a little bit more nerdy than you were used to, but still got the job done, which you totally see in his character, and it came across. But they said, no, we want it to be an outright farce, and he kept fighting with them on it, and eventually just said, well, like, you clearly don't want me, you want someone else. And they're like, you're right, we want David Niven. So that's why they kill him off in it. But I think the line that really comes through that shows what could have been is when she says, you're wearing your glasses at the casino, and he says, I like to see who I'm shooting. And it's funny, but it's still kind of dangerous. I think it would have been so cool if it actually, like, if Peter Sellers, if they'd let him play this, like, funny but still dangerous character, you know?
What about the old story where Peter Sellers hated Orson Welles and Orson Welles hated Peter Sellers to the point where they couldn't do scenes together?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, if you look, they're never in the same scene. They have hand doubles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never got the reason why. Like what Peter Sellers did to Orson Welles, or what Orson Welles did to Peter Sellers.
I know that the one thing I have heard is that Orson Welles insisted on including magic tricks in his scene, and Peter Sellers thought that, you know, yet again it was making it more of a stupid farce, and he wanted it to be more, you could have wordplay and gags, but he wanted the actual movie to be shot like a Bond movie. Or shot like a spy movie. So I know he didn't like all those, Orson Welles cracking eggs and having birds coming out of them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway, so what's number one?
Number one, surprisingly, Thunderball.
Thunderball is an incredibly popular movie.
Yeah, I know that's true. But
I'm going to say this, that it's the popularity of it isn't unfounded. It's a good frickin' movie. I mean, I would put License to Kill as number one, but I'd put Thunderball as two or three.
Really? I would say I like movies I like better than Thunderball. License to Kill, GoldenEye, definitely Goldfinger. That's still my number one.
I'm agreeing with you so far.
Yeah. The Spy Who Loved Me, Man with the Golden Gun. Yeah, like I would put Thunderball as... Okay, I'd say it's Sean Connery's third best Bond movie. Goldfinger and From Russia with Love, I think, are much better than it. Thunderball's got some cool stuff, but like, I think there's a great quote from, was it Michael G. Wilson? Is that the Broccoli's illegitimate son who produces the movies now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Michael G. Wilson. He says, every time we make a new Bond movie, we set out to make another From Russia with Love, but we end up making Thunderball. Thunderball is the ultimate just all-action movie. It's what Quantum of Solace is. It's what Tomorrow Never Dies is. It's the best example of an all-action James Bond movie. And the guy who plays Largo is awesome and amazing and has this great, like, both, like...
One of the few villains that's killed by the Bond girl and not Bond.
Oh, that's a good point. But and I forget how it works in the movie, but in the book, he tortures the shit out of her. So, like, it makes sense that she's the one who gets him.
Well, they balk on the showing torture, but she's the one that shows up with the harpoon cannon in the bridge. And Largo looks like he's getting the upper hand of choking out Bond or whatever.
Yeah.
And she shoots him.
Yeah. The
Domino is the name of the character.
Oh, that's right.
Things that I don't know what the name of the character is.
Yeah. No, it's got those underwater scenes are great. Of the it's definitely a good Bond movie. And all the underwater scenes with his henchmen are really cool. But I definitely don't think it should be number one. P.S. So Sean Connery has tattoos on his right forearm throughout the Bond movies.
I did not know that.
I didn't realize that
Connery thing or what?
I don't know. I didn't realize that until looking at publicity stills for two different Connery movies on here. He's got these tattoos on his right forearm. I can't quite see what they are, but he's got two different tattoos on there, and they're in all these publicity stills. I'd never noticed that. I've seen all his movies multiple times. That's crazy.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they must be his real tattoos, because they wouldn't have just put them on for the movies, you know?
Ah, I mean, they might do a lot of crazy things.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, so there we are. That's the that was all 23 of them. Thanks for going through this with me. That was super interesting. So what are some of your favorite Bond girls? I mean, we've obviously gone through all the movies, but just what are some of your standout Bond girls?
Standout Bond girls. Look, okay, so not for the what do you want for the character or for the actual attractiveness of the woman herself?
Either way, whatever leaps to your mind.
I've always been a big fan of Sophie Marceau, even though she was given a crap character.
Which character is she? I'm forgetting.
She was Elektra in The World Is Not, or yeah, World Is Not Enough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's she does a good job with that role. Like I said, I just wish that role had been more defined. Either made her more Stockholm syndrome-y or more evil. You know, like it kind of needed to go one way or the other.
It's not Sophie's faulted.
Yeah, no, she does a good job with it. I'm a big fan of, I like Michelle Yeoh a lot in Tomorrow Never Dies. That was sort of the first Bond girl to hold up her own against Bond, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The new girl who plays Eve in the new movie, the African-American actress whose name I'm blanking on who plays Eve, does a really good job, too. Her and Craig have a really great repartee in it. I was really pleased with that.
Okay.
Oh, actually, speaking of the girls in the movie, there's this great scene where this girl who's a under the thumb of Javier Bardem's character, he meets her at the casino and she's just smoking heavily, and she says that line that's in the trailer where she says, do you know fear, Mr. Bond? And he goes, yes, and she goes, not like this, not him. And then, like, as they get closer to her, she's like, her face is, the actress does a really good job of just being terrified, because she's going to, like, go against her boss's orders and bring Bond to him. And then as they zoom in on her, her, like...
Wait. I just figured this out. This new character, is she the crazy voodoo woman from Pirates of the Caribbean?
Oh my gosh, you're right, she is! Wow, she looks so different when she's not, like, when she's not wearing
she's not clothes. Smothered in, like, evil and dirt makeup.
Yeah, exactly, with, like, that like, white and black makeup over her eyes, yeah. Yeah, you're right, it's totally her. Man, she's awesome. Yeah, I really liked her in this movie. So they zoom in on her, and her lips almost look like they have, you know, like they have makeup on them, but they have this, like, the tobacco tar stain underneath, and her teeth as they get closer look kind of, like, tobacco-y, and she's breathing all this smoke on Bond, and I almost felt like it was, like, you know, she is death, and by her helping Bond define Bardem, she's, like, bringing death and breathing death on him, and I might be getting too metaphorical, but the way they were just, like, going in on her face, and her face was looking more and more grotesque, especially her lips and teeth. I almost feel like that was something they were going for. It was like, you know, he's this, Silva is, you know, sort of sickens and kills those around him almost just by his, like, his air, you know, just by having them under his thumb. So that's not strictly a Bond girl thing, but that was just something I want to mention in terms of the girls in the new movie. The list
the problem
that...
is the people that I really want to like, really don't aren't very strong characters.
Yeah, well, and like I said, one of my other favorites, and I think they do a very good job making her a strong character, is Pussy Galore. I think Honor Blackman does a great job with that character.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of many strong female characters besides her, other than the Russian girl, maybe from Russia with Love.
Yeah,
but even she ends up Stockholm syndrome-ing, which is you know, automatically like, okay, we've done something wrong with the character here.
Yeah, and then who's a super strong Bond character? What's that?
Who was the Bond girl that won, or that won the one Bond girl that dies, the other one that doesn't contest in License to Kill? Was it Sanchez's girlfriend, or was it the other one?
Oh, God, I don't remember. It's the girl that he meets on, that he has sex with on the boat, who makes it to the end, right?
Yeah.
The girl he meets up with at the bar. Yeah, I'm blanking on her name, though. But another Bond girl who I like a lot, it might be my favorite, actually, is Xena Onatopp.
Oh, yeah.
From GoldenEye.
I really didn't like her character because it's opposite of what one should do to make a strong female character, which is the one way to go wrong is to say, oh, all she cares about is finding the strong man who's been looking for her the whole time, and then she's just been waiting for, which is most Bond girls. And then the other one is, well, how do I make a strong Bond girl to contrast that? I'll make someone who's like, I don't need a man, I'm practically a man, I'll kill anyone.
I guess that's true.
Which is like, you know, I mean, even Bond in the sense is like, that's why Bond is read as a misogynist. Is because that's all, you know, at his worst, that's all he is.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I just like that character so much. Like, she's so, like, just on a base level, sexy. Oh, yeah, and
the hotness of, oh, yeah, a woman who's so strong, she could kill me with her legs. Okay, fine. I can get that in terms of an S&M sort of aesthetic.
And but she has the
just because you've made a female assassin doesn't mean you've made a legitimately strong female character. No, you've just projected some sort of violence into a character that has different genitalia, and this is supposed to be a grand thing. Not necessarily.
Yeah.
If you change James Bond's genitalia and he happened to be Jill Bond and she's the assassin on behalf of the British Empire, would that make her any better morally? No. I mean, would that make her less of a... So the idea of making Bond more flawed is the idea of taking this, I can get whatever woman I want, but also actually have a conscience sort of thing, and eventually turning that into a human being. But, you know, you have to do that on both sides, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true, but I don't know. There's just something about her. I feel like she is, you know, this, like, feral animal like character, which, you know, she that's what I like about her. She is Red Grant but a girl, and I don't feel like it's being, you know, obviously they made her be a girl because, like, oh look, the Bond girl actually has something to do, but I feel like it's more than that. Like, to me, her character doesn't...
Do you think Red Grant's an animal?
What? In the book he definitely is.
I don't think Red Grant's an animal. I think he's Dexter but never learned any rules.
Yeah, but I feel like she's...
Or the rules that he learned were just not rules that were accepted by society at large.
But they definitely do both share the very, just very much how much pleasure they get out of their job. And I think it's cool to see, you know, she's definitely a character you've never seen before or since in a Bond movie.
I give you that. To let a female character be the evil sociopath.
Yeah.
While it's not making a stronger female character, it's creating a new... Hold on. It is kind of like Mayday in View to a Kill.
Except they don't ever wuss out. Like, Mayday totally starts helping Bond at the end.
Mayday realized that the people that she cared about were her clique of friends. And that the Zorin out-sociopathed her, and she realized, oh, wait, I'm not a sociopath. Oh, okay, I can actually make a stand. I don't care about Silicon Valley. I don't care about the innocents. I care about you killing my friends, and that's worthy enough of me to try to upend you.
Okay, that's fair.
The reason that converts Mady is not the murder of the innocent. It's the murder of her friends.
That's fair. That's a good point. That's cool. I liked that discussion. That was interesting. They made the number one, which I can't disagree with, Ursula Andress as Honey Child Rider in Dr. No as their number one Bond girl.
She actually has a very complicated character given what follows. Because she plays behind the, oh, I am a weak female character, but it was like, but has this thing where, look, some dude was taking advantage of me and raping me, so I decided to poison him. Because I didn't want that to happen anymore. And you see this moment of, oh, so there is more to you. There is some, there are these, you know, drive to violence that you're repressing, or I don't know what to make of this. It's confusing.
Yeah, no, that is cool, and that's a very good point.
Like, it's like I presented myself as a weak character for a while, but the thing is, once I actually was repeatedly taken advantage of, I did something that seemed completely out of character, and I don't know what to make of it, and you shouldn't know what to make of it, the viewer.
Good point, man. But yeah, no, that's so, man. Thanks a bunch. I think we did a great job of going through the whole series here. Anyone who has any thoughts on Bond, drop us an email at hourofthunder@gmail.com. That's hourofthunder@gmail.com.
Okay, so let me be very unlike me. Let me put the scoring up to you.
Up to me?
Up to you. Based on the fact that what we have talked about tonight and the fact that I have beaten you in James Bond seen it ever since we started playing.
That's only because you know that Jinx was born on Friday the 13th.
Oh, that was hilarious how often I got that question.
Whenever me and Sean play James Bond seen it.
But you know what? I'm giving Thor the scoring tonight.
Okay, I'm going to say, so you already had that Hogan had 33, that Vidor had 33.5. So I'm gonna give you a Naked Gun 33.3.
Oh, okay.
So just below,
I'm okay with that.
Just below Hogan. And F-F? I'm gonna give myself a 007.
Oh! You read that backwards, it means you won. But
hey, but the episode
we don't read from right to left.
But the episode gets a 69 because that's the episode number. So you know what that means? James Bond won, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Excellent.
Oh, I gotta say, other thing that was great about Skyfall, just really quick before we go, is before the end credits even started, they had a thing that said 50 years of James Bond, and then James Bond will return, because I was so bummed they didn't put that in Quantum of Solace. It was the only James Bond movie to not say James Bond will return at the end, so it's nice to see that back, because, like, that's the thing, is, there, you know, James Bond movies, you always see that at the end, and you know you're gonna be back in the theaters in a couple years, and you got that to look forward to. It's nice that James Bonds are a constant in a, you know, forever changing world.
Okay, well let me leave you with this. The weed of crime bears bitter fruit, and there is only one movie series that rivals James Bond for as many movies. It is the Godzilla series. And if you're wondering out there, Godzilla will return in 2014 for movie 2028. The Shadow Knows.
My name is James Bond and I love to get plastered. I bang heaps of bitches cause I'm a smooth bastard. I tell them I love them, then I fuck off back to London on my jetpack. That's how I roll. I need heaps of gadgets cause I carry a shit gun. After killing my enemies, I like to make shit puns. Like the time I asked this guy who was crushed by a milk truck, got milk as he died. It's okay for me to act like a prick. I like to fuck up the towns that I visit, then let Russian sluts eat my dick. Because I'm suave, you can suck it. I'll ski on your lunch if I want. Take a stroll on the heads of some reptiles, then act heaps nonchalant. With Dr. Quinn, I've been to outer space. If you try to fuck with me, I'll mess up your stupid face with judo, judo, with motherfucking judo. I seem to get younger as I get older. I'm always being handed lots of important folders. This martini is shithouse, it should be a lot colder. Hey bartender, you're a cunt. Before I go, I'll let you you know the number of hoes I fucked like a